relationship between my country and Europe, but I won't. So thank you. I'll try and keep an eye on the time, though I can't see the clock very well. I have a lot that I want to say, so I've asked Andy to just tell me to shut up when I've gone on too long. So as he said, previously my work was focused specifically on low-income energy efficiency in New Haven. For almost a year now, I've transitioned from that job to working with low-income people with mental illness in New Haven. It's very different work, but there is an overlap in the sense that the people I work with currently are very, very overburdened with energy costs. So I'll talk a little bit about that. But in what follows, I'm going to be talking about how well or not so well the ratepayer-funded, i.e. us, utility-administered energy efficiency programs in the state have managed to reach low-income people. And the focus of my talk is really not so much clean energy as less energy, though it kind of comes to the same thing. So I'm just going to briefly talk a little bit about the context in New Haven. Most of you probably know everything I'm about to say, but I think it's worth a reminder. I remind myself frequently about this. So it's a very poor city, as you all know, and it's an extremely unequal city. 26% of New Haven residents live beneath the federal poverty level, which is $24,000 for a family of four. 46% of people live below twice the federal poverty level, which is generally seen as actually the more realistic poverty level. And about 63%, I think, live below what's seen as the required income given the cost of living in New Haven, which is $65,000 for a family of four. So extremely poor. It's the sixth most unequal city in the country. Is this working?
No.
Just started.
No, it's not.
Hello?
Yeah. It works. It works. Just keep talking.
It's the sixth most unequal city in the country, and inequality has grown faster here since 2008 than any other city in the country, according to the Brookings Institute. It's intensely segregated with areas of concentrated poverty and concentrated wealth existing side by side in a relatively small geographic space. Dave Table has done some fantastic research on that. As far as the housing we have in New Haven, 39% is 2 to 4 unit buildings. This will become relevant when I later on. About 30% is more than 5 units, and about 20% is single family. Nobody's complaining, so I think that's right. 70% of people rent. Most of those who rent do so in 2 to 4 unit or larger, or buildings with a larger number of units than that. So that's the kind of the context we're talking about. Now, poverty is the most obvious barrier to bringing about change around clean energy. The multiple kind of aspects of poverty and its cascading effects that throw up multiple barriers. Inequality is also a problem. We could spend a whole day talking about how inequality causes problems. One of the most obvious ones, specific to the program we're talking about, the energy efficiency programming, is when you have the bigger the variation in the needs of the population you're trying to serve, the harder it is to come up with programs that meet the needs of a large number of people. And generally, an unequal society is one with a lower level of shared community and trust, which makes outreach extremely difficult. All of these things are true in New Haven. Now, you didn't come here to hear me talk about poverty. We're supposed to be talking about clean energy, or less energy in my case. So what has this got to do with what we're trying to reach in terms of energy? The first point I want to make is that the people, low-income people in New Haven, really struggle to afford the energy that they use. So this is if we're talking about less energy, then we're talking about lower cost energy, and most clean energy is also lower cost. So one of the reasons why we need to worry about low-income people and programs we're talking about is because they can't afford their energy bills currently. A study is regularly done on the affordability gap when it comes to energy, and the 2015 study showed that for people living below 200% of the federal poverty level, which in New Haven is 4 to 6% of the population, they can't afford their bills, their energy bills, and the average shortfall is $1,500 a year. So that's 46% of New Haven residents who are struggling to find $1,500 a year to pay their bills. We have funding through LIHEAP, low-income housing energy assistance program, to help people pay their bills, but that covers only 15% of the shortfall. And what this results in is firstly a high level of disconnections. The data from 2013 shows us that just for electricity, and typically people will cut off gas before they cut off electricity, just for electricity, more than 1,000 homes in New Haven were disconnected between April and November of 2013. So that's 1,000 homes, depending on if they managed to get it back on. But if they didn't, living without light, without cooling, sometimes without cooking facilities, sometimes without hot water, if electricity is required for that, a lot of people lose gas too. Heating is more reliable because between November and April, there are requirements to ensure that heat is provided. But for people who are disconnected, it's a huge problem. For those who don't get disconnected and struggle to make it work, there's plenty of evidence from around the country that they cut back in other areas. Food, educational supplies for kids, they just keep the heat down when they live in uncomfortably and unhealthily cold or warm conditions depending on the season. So the effects of this are not only extremely negative for people's individual lives, physical and mental health is affected in multiple ways, from nutritional deficits to risk of fire and carbon monoxide poisoning from people using candles or using their stoves to heat the home, and high levels of stress, which I see every day in the work I do now. But there's broader financial implications for all of us. Low-income people tend to be provided services that the taxpayer pays for. So the more health, physical and mental health problems people have, the more educational problems people have, the more we all pay. And then the publicly funded resources that help people pay their bills, like LIHEAP or like the ratepayer funded programs within the utilities that help people pay their bills, are paid for by ratepayers. So there are implications beyond just the direct impact on people's lives. So that's frankly why I think it's crucial that these people get the support they need in reducing their energy consumption and reducing the amount they pay for energy. So how well are we doing in helping people who are really struggling get access through energy efficiency programs and others to reduce the amount of energy that they use or the price they pay? And the answer is really not very well. First, I do want to stress that Connecticut actually does a fantastic job, relatively speaking. This isn't, the next few words I'm going to say, I'm not hurling abuse at the program. The programs are pretty good, though of course they can do better. My comments really are a reflection of how very, very difficult it is to reach the people who need the most help. So I'll focus now very much just on the energy efficiency programs that exist in the state, and also just on New Haven, because that's what it is. So the first thing I won't go into is that Bridgeport did much better than us in 2013. We can talk about that in question and answer time. What I really want to focus is on the fact that in New Haven, though some fantastic work was done, by and large, those who needed it most did not get the services they needed. Note that there are two primary programs through which you can get help making your home more energy efficient. One is the Home Energy Solutions Program, or HESS, which serves people above 60% state median income. The vast majority of people, about 60% of the population in this city, lives below that level, so we're primarily getting the Home Energy Solutions Income Eligible Program, HESS by need. So you see that HESS spent, in New Haven in 2013, HESS served 219 homes, HESS IE served 827 homes. So what I'm really going to focus on is who actually benefited from that HESS IE programming in New Haven in 2013. And we know people didn't report their incomes. I don't know the incomes of the people who were served. So how is it that I know that the poor didn't benefit? We know because we know what types of properties were served. The equitable distribution data that DEEP is responsible for putting out tells us what kind of properties are served by which program. We know that poor people are more likely to be renters, and that they're most likely to live in 2-4 unit homes or 5 and above. Most do not live in single family homes. There are some exceptions, particularly among elderly people, but by and large, people who live in single family homes are not the poorest among that population. But the HESS IE program in 2013 primarily served people living in single-family homes. It did a particularly poor job of reaching 2-4 unit homes. And this table basically shows you that in New Haven, for example, only 20% of homes were single-family, yet single-family homes were 48% of all the homes reached by the program. This is the one that particularly concerns me, that almost 40% of the housing in the stock in New Haven is 2 to 4 unit, and yet the program only managed to reach, it only made, those homes only made up 12% of the homes served by the program. And if you look and take a little bit more detail and go down to the census tract level, it's even worse. So, for example, in Edgewood neighborhood, census tract 1409, there's only 9% of homes in that census tract are single-family homes, and yet of 92% of those served by the SIE program are single-family. And there's similar figures for the Hill, 18% versus 79%, and Newhallville, 22%. Versus 67%. So obviously, 2 to 4 unit homes are particularly difficult to reach with this spiking need of service. One more concern I have is that what's happening in the home served. Did I put a slide on this? No. Very briefly, we can talk more about this if you're interested. If you divide up the amount of money spent per home, you would expect to see a far greater number per HES IE job. Because if you're in the HES IE program, you get a ton of stuff for free. Not just the initial audit energy assessment and like window ceiling, but also insulation for your walls and your attic. So you would expect it to be considerably higher than the amount per HES job. And yet what you see is that HES jobs in New Haven in 2013 were an average of $1,100 per home spent. The HES IE program was only $1,363 spent per home, which suggests to me, unless I've misunderstood it, that most of the homes served just had the initial energy assessment and air sealing. They didn't actually have those deeper measures, which made the bigger difference. So I will finish just by quickly going through why I think this is happening, what the barriers are, with the idea that, you know, what the barriers are, we can think about solving them. The first is mistrust, and it goes a little bit back to the inequality thing I was talking about. But most people who struggle to pay their bills don't associate UI or the gas company, same thing now, with good things. They associate them with bad things. So programs through those companies, however good they are, people mistrust them. It's just the fact. There's also the bandwidth barrier. Most people who are struggling to pay their bill struggle to pay their bill. They're not. It's much harder to look ahead to the, you know, the 5-year payoff from attic insulation. You're thinking about paying that bill so the lights don't get shut off. Another bandwidth problem. It takes considerable time and energy to apply for and go through these programs. The paperwork, the documentation, proving eligibility. It's something that ends up falling down on people's list of priorities. And also the fact that people have unpredictable lives. Low-income people tend to have unpredictable hours, for example. So you may schedule an appointment 6 weeks in advance, but when that day comes and you have to take half a day off work, it's often not possible to be there. And actually, in a study we did talking to vendors, by quite a long way, the main reason for people dropping out of the program once they'd signed up was no-shows or last-minute cancellations. Landlords, I'm sure you all know, their landlord-tenant disincentive problems. Landlords don't pay the bills, so they don't care. Even when they do care, if they're absentee to get them to sign the paperwork, it just adds another layer of bureaucracy to a process which also already loses lots of people. Renters are transient, so not so invested in their living space. People are often afraid to bother their landlords if they're behind on the rent or don't want the rent to go up, they don't want to rock the boat. And then there's the big one, which is fear of code violations, kind of stuff. And landlords who are renting at reasonable, cheap rents may not be maintaining their own the standard required by the city. And the last thing they want is contractors coming in and maybe discovering those problems. Is that actually tenants very often don't want code violations discovered because they may be living in lousy conditions, but they can afford to pay the rent. And it's not helpful for them for somebody to find out that they shouldn't be living there. And finally, what I've spent most time looking into is health and safety barriers. The list of things that can stop energy efficiency work being done in a home and are much more likely to arise in low-income homes. Mm. And these are asbestos, which actually isn't really income-related, but the rest of them are. Elevated gas or carbon monoxide levels from furnaces or stoves that aren't well maintained, mold from poor ventilation, damaged or broken furnaces, damaged or leaking roofs. These problems very, very frequently prevent work from being done in low-income homes. And I did want to say there's, as my, some colleagues and myself did a study a couple of years ago interviewing contractors who do this work in people's homes to find out the extent to which these problems prevent work from being done. I'm kind of still waiting for UI to approve that study, but it is we do have the findings, and they're interesting. And like I said, mold, elevating gas and carbon monoxide levels are key barriers. So I think I do have a slide on some of the potential solutions, but I'll leave it for now. I don't want to go over my time. And maybe during the question and answer session, we can talk about this more. Thank you.